Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the ninth day of July, 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets and the technical side of the charts with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. Matt Bennett from Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting in Windsor, Illinois will join us too. He'll help us lay out the fundamental side of the market, and together we'll draw a bigger picture that may give us an indication of what the world agricultural supply and demand estimates to be released tomorrow morning by USDA at 11 a.m. Central Time will look like. Along the way, we'll get an update of the livestock market from Chris Hurt at Purdue University and hear more about the weather forecast that's been moving the markets. That with Mike Tenor at T-Storm Weather in Chicago, all on this Thursday edition of our program from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's check the numbers as they finished up in Chicago on a Thursday afternoon. Futures were higher at the end of the day. July corn up a nickel, $4.21 1/4 the settlement price. December futures at $4.39. The new crop up 4 3/4. The March there up nickel at $4.49, and July at $4.57 up 4 1/4 cents. Soy complex July beans $10.37 3/4 up 31.5 for the day. September $10.17 1/4 up 29 1/4. And November, the new crop, $10.15 3/4, a gain of 27.5 cents. January at $10.22, up 27.5. And next year's July at $10.08, up 23.5. Bean meal up $13.20 for the day at $3.64. Bean oils $32.27, up 67. Soft red winter wheat was unchanged at the end of the day, $5.72 1/4. And the hard red at $5.65, down 3 1/4. Both of those, of course, the harvest month July contracts. Live cattle future now 17.5 cents lower at 148.82.5. The August feeders are trading down 67.5 cents, 212.95, and lean hogs for the day 55 cents lower at $78.95. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find all of our programming from the Opening Market Report to the Closing Market Report and everything in between on our website. The address, willag.org. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. In the energies, crude oil trading at $52.84 a barrel, up $1.19. Ethanol futures at $1.64, they're pinning a half higher for the day. Gasoline on the RBOB at $2.04 3/10 cents, 4 4/10 cents higher, and the heating oil at $1.73 7/10. That's up 2 2/10 cents. Diesel fuel, that is. Natural gas at $2.72 3/10, up 3 8/10 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average about 69 points higher at 17,511. The U.S. dollar index at 96.795 is up 0.318. And the gold futures on the day trading the August contract at $1,159 even, down $4.50. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon still. On our way to a high of 70 degrees, we should be right there now. West winds at about 7 miles an hour tonight. Cloudy, 59-degree low. West-northwest winds this evening at 5 miles an hour. They'll be calm throughout the evening. A 20% chance of rainfall, some thunderstorms before 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, Central Time on Friday, partly sunny. High of 80 degrees, light and variable winds out of the east-southeast tomorrow at 6. And then Friday evening, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy. The winds out of the southeast again at 3 to 5 will drop to a low of 64 degrees. And on Saturday, a 30% chance of rainfall, partly sunny skies, a high of 86 degrees. Saturday evening, a 40% chance of rainfall, down to a low of 70. Sunday, a 30% chance of rain at 87. Monday, 86 degrees. And on Tuesday, 85 degrees. More on the weather at the bottom of this half hour. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line to take a look at the marketplace is Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon, Dan. Tomorrow, the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate Reports are due out. We'll take those up in just a moment. But if you could set up technically where we are on the charts for both the corn and the soybeans at this time, I would certainly be appreciative.
Well, Paul Cooley keeps reminding me that there's a lot of charts at the bottom of the ocean, so I guess I want to start out with that.
Did he call you and tell you? Because that's one of his favorite sayings.
I know that's one of his favorite sayings. He might be listening and it might be getting a kick out of it. Also, I think from a statistical point of view, there's an awful lot of market highs posted between June 15th and July 15th. And once you get past July 15th, the odds of making higher highs for the year begin to get thinner and thinner and thinner. Unless this is a super short crop, and we usually have one of those 1 in 5 years, then the market, you know, continues stronger as you go on into the fall months, and that's where you get your short crop peaks early in the marketing season and then has a long tail. So I do think we're in a danger window here of maybe the market overdoing the concerns of production concerns at the moment. I went back and looked at the 1993 charts, and today the 1993 market topped on July 9th. So I don't know if that's a good omen or a bad omen, but and then it broke pretty hard until we finally realized how much damage the excessive rainfall that we had in 1993 began to realize when the combines went to the field and then we took off like a rocket. With all that kind of preface set, I do think, you know, people's got to be cautious here. I don't want to screw up anybody's marketing plan with some of these upside objectives, but you can look at the corn chart. Ever since we had the high here a week ago, we've kind of been in a consolidation phase for about 4 or 5 days, and now today we've kind of broken out of that consolidation phase. We didn't get a real strong close above last week's high, but we did close, you know, higher. So it does suggest that we are breaking out of this pattern. And if you would want to use this consolidation phase as kind of a measuring phase or a halfway point of a rally drawn off of the early June lows, you can begin to talk about maybe a move to $5 in December corn. But I just want to caution everybody that that's just, you know, a technical objective, and in order for that to happen, we're going to have weather patterns continue to come forward that shrinks the crop. As soon as the weather patterns stop shrinking the crop, well, then you're going to run out of upward momentum. So got to be a little careful there. Same way on November beans, when you take a look at the seasonality, June is a big month for November beans to make a high. Then there's several of them that's made by the time you get to mid-July. So, but once you get past mid-July, higher highs for the year begin to get a little scarce. So we are beginning to get into this unknown territory. So I am encouraging people to, you know, get down to earth here and watch these prices and don't get too carried away. We haven't made a higher high yet in beans. All we've done is a recovery rally of this big break that we had basically started on, I guess, Tuesday. We had a big hard down. Yesterday we reversed up, and then we had strong follow-through. In order to really get the beans solidified that we're going to take the next run up, we do need to take out last week's high, and that is, I think, is going to be something like 1040 in the November contract. If you begin to do that, some of your technicians then will use this corrective decline that we had from 1040 down to 978 and use the midpoint and swing that off of this June 15th low. And then you can begin to maybe talk about an upside target in November beans about 1122. But as I mentioned with corn, you're going to have the market has to be thinking that the crop is getting smaller. So therefore, we're going to have to see some crop rating declines in Monday's report to keep the upward momentum going, or otherwise this market is going to fall back. And the thing that I think we have to worry about is that we don't have anything that's as quantitatively surveyed. Tomorrow's report is going to be the World Board. They're going to, you know, take a look at supply-demand projections. They're going to have to reflect the June stocks numbers, the June acreage numbers in those supply-demand tables. My guess is that we're going to see a smaller ending stocks level for the current year based upon those June 1st stocks numbers, and that will carry through as, you know, carry in for the next year. And my guess with the crop rating levels where they're at, they are likely to shave the yields down, and that's going to be the big question, and that's the big argument that we're having in the trade right now. Is it bad enough in the East to pull down the national average to 161 or 2 or 3, or is it good enough in the West to offset the damage that we've had in the East to keep the yield in this 164, 165, and nobody knows for sure. We're probably not going to know until the combines start rolling. And then if the yields are way short, then that market's going to take off like it does in a normal short crop year. Same way with on beans. I suppose that's the one that farmers are telling me they're most concerned about is soybeans. And there's a big difference between a 45 bushel yield and a 42 bushel yield on the balance sheet, and that's going to be the argument that we're going to argue until we see USDA's August report and probably USDA's September report, and then we'll have that finalized a little bit. But we still have a couple months of the growing season to go. So far, we've been pretty wet here in the eastern Corn Belt. We've been generally cool. When you talk about mid-80s for highs, that means Texas, we're only having mid-90s instead of having 100-degree days. So it is significantly cooler down south here, too. So, but I do think that farmers need to pay attention here. Don't get too wrapped up in looking out their back door and kind of manage the risk. We're in unknown charter territory here with the China economy, the Greece situation. There's a lot of outside factors that could come along and take some marketing opportunities away from us, and we just need to kind of be just alert on that. But yes, my long-term cycles are all pointing higher. I've spent all winter talking about those long-term cycles. They are catching here, but nothing is perfect in life. And we do, in order to keep this market going, the trade has to begin to think that the crop is getting smaller.
Thank you so much for taking the time with us. I do appreciate it. Looking forward to talking to you again next week.
Very well.
That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. Joins us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, Hudsonville, Illinois, and Crescent City, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
Just a couple of items in today's agricultural news. Canada says it supports TPP as the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade talks near the finish line later this month. The Canadian government has once again pledged support for the trade deal. Canada's finance minister, Joe Oliver, says increased trade and investment will benefit the economy. Bloomberg reports his comments come as TPP talks heat up amid questions over what changes the Canadian government, with an election just 3 months away, is willing to make to its protected poultry and dairy sectors to secure its place in any agreement. Well, U.S. beef and pork exports were a bit sluggish in May. U.S. beef and pork exports fell in May below year-ago levels. The U.S. Meat Export Federation reported the sluggish month followed an encouraging performance in April. Beef exports for the month of May dropped 14% from the year earlier, while value of beef exports dipped lower year over year for the first time since January, reaching only $556.7 million. That's down 6%. Pork exports dropped 2% from a year ago, while the value of pork exports fell 18%. And finally today, Republican Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa is urging fair treatment of the Wind Energy Production Tax Credit. Grassley penned a letter to Senate Finance Committee Chairman Orrin Hatch asking for the fair treatment whenever the committee takes up expired or expiring tax provisions. Grassley's letter noted that opponents of renewable energy single out such provisions for removal while overlooking the many generous permanent provisions benefiting other forms of energy. Nationally, the wind energy industry supports more than 73,000 jobs. Grassley, a former chairman of the Finance Committee, authored and won enactment of the first ever wind energy production tax credit in 1992. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Weather-damaged corn and soybean fields are also harmful to hog producers. Rising feed prices mean higher production costs for the pork industry. Recent higher corn and soybean meal prices have increased anticipated hog costs by about $10 per head, says a Purdue University Extension ag economist. These higher feed costs shift the pork industry outlook from one of modest profits to losses, says Chris Hurt, of about $6 per head over the coming 12 months.
The rising feed cost, of course, that's a new concern for producers. If we just look at the last couple of weeks, December 15 corn futures rose from about $3.80 a bushel on June 24th to now around $4.30 on July 6th. That represents a 50-cent per bushel increase, and that increases hog production costs by about $2.25 per live hundredweight. Meal prices, roughly similar time, have been up about $40 a ton, and my estimate is that that's about $1.25 per live hundredweight higher. You put those together, that says about $3.50 per live hundredweight higher cost with the corn and soybean meal price increase. So that's about $10 per hog higher increase.
Weather is a primary driver of feed costs right now, so no one knows if feed costs will get much higher or more moderate from here. In June, it cost about $50 to produce 100 pounds of pork, says Chris Hurt. With current higher feed costs are expected to be closer to $53.50 for the last half of 2015 and the first half of 2016. He cautions, of course, that feed prices can change considerably depending on weather for the rest of the growing season. Right now, it means pork producers will likely break even this quarter and lose about $18 a head on those hogs marketed in October, November, and December. Hog prices averaged about $48 in the first quarter of this year, with an estimated loss of $11 per head. Second quarter prices were near $56 for an estimated profit of $14 a head. In the third quarter, prices are expected to average about $53 per hundredweight, which is near break-even. The final quarter this year is expected to see prices drop to $47, with losses estimated at $18 a head.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. lending support to generations of farm families. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Let's turn our attention now to the cash grain market. We're joined by Matt Bennett. He's at Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois. He's a farmer there, too. Thanks, Matt, for taking the time with us. Lay out the fundamental picture as you see it for me today, please.
Well, I think when you look fundamentally, obviously we've got a report tomorrow everyone's kind of keeping an eye on. But, you know, it's tough to gauge supply at this point. It's tough to gauge yield at this point. Considering we have so many problem areas, and then we've got problem areas on the other end of the extreme that are saying they've got really good yield potential. So, you know, from the demand side of it, things look pretty good moving forward. If at these price levels, what's that going to do to demand? You know, that's a tough call. But by all means, looking at it from a fundamental standpoint, I feel pretty good that until we know more about this crop, we're going to have a tough time killing the prices.
What has your folks inside Channel Seeds been telling you, the agronomist, about the condition of the crop, its ability to continue to move through the season, in particular corn, if it's been under saturated conditions, and what will it do going forward, do you know?
Well, I think the thing that everyone probably should understand is corn, once you've really stunted it and hurt it early in its stages, especially whenever it's trying to determine the yield potential, it's really tough to get much out of it if you permanently damage it at that stage. And so a lot of the corn that we've seen, and I've seen it in a lot of parts of the Corn Belt, it's even yellowish and maybe chest high at most. You know, some of that corn's going to be lucky to make 100 bushels. So, you know, management from this point forward probably doesn't have a whole lot to do with anything. So I think that as far as the corn crop's concerned, where it's been hurt really bad, it's just that's what you've got.
And the soy crop?
Well, I think with soybeans, you know, they're awfully resilient, but they really don't like wet feed. And they just need some heat. And I think maybe you could still have some decent beans, but if we're going to have anybody thinking we're going to have anything like what we had last year, either with corn or beans, I think that they're sadly mistaken just because it's just not there.
What do you know about the condition on the ground for basis in your local area? How's it holding up?
You know, basis has held up better than what I thought it would. It's definitely softened both for corn and beans since we started this rally and then intermittently during the rally, but it hasn't softened near as much as a person would think. And so, you know, I do think there's a fair amount of farm ownership yet with corn. There's very little on soybeans. So basis probably will react accordingly. I would suppose you'd probably soften up more on corn, and basis on beans can stay fairly decent.
All right. Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us.
Yeah, thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Matt Bennett. He is with Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois. Joins us here on this Thursday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report. The USDA reports are due out at 11 o'clock a.m. Central Time tomorrow. You can follow those reports and see the numbers as quickly as possible. I'll have them posted to the website at willag.org. Not long, within a few seconds, I hope, a couple of minutes at 11.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
It's National Sugar Cookie Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1766, Jacob Perkins was born. Perkins was issued the first U.S. patent for a refrigerating machine. It used sulfuric ether compression. In 1792, S.L. Mitchell was named as the first professor of agriculture at Columbia College in New York City. In 1808, Samuel Parker patented the leather splitting machine. In 1815, the first natural gas well in the U.S. was discovered by accident near Charleston, West Virginia, while digging salt brine wells. In 1869, Henry Tibby invented the corncob pipe. By the way, the pipe was made from a special type of white kernel corn that was used to make taco and tortilla flour. In 1894, Percy LeBaron Spencer was born. Spencer developed the microwave oven in 1946 after he noticed that some chocolate in his pocket had melted. Spencer deduced the candy melted not due to body heat, but rather exposure to radiation from a magnetron tube. And in 1996, Douglas Chapman died. A Canadian-born U.S. mathematical statistician, Chapman did extensive research on fish farming, and he developed quantitative methods aiding in the management of fisheries. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
This is the closing market report from Illinois Public Media. Time to check the weather forecast with Mike Tenora of T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. Mike, the rain fell across Missouri, Illinois, and Indiana last night. Tell me about it.
You're exactly right. A lot of those areas did see heavy rainfall, especially in the Bloomington region, where locally over 3 to 4 inches was reported. So we didn't have a lot of rain once again overnight, but the coverage of that event was a little bit smaller than some of the events we saw in the past. Now, we do have a few more rain chances out there over the next couple of days, but that's primarily because it's a significant pattern change is beginning. We have a warm weather pattern that is going to start here over the next couple of days, and it will turn downright hot across different parts of the central U.S., over the next 1 to 2 weeks, beginning as early as Saturday and Sunday. Initially, what that means for the wettest areas of the eastern Corn Belt is a few more thunderstorm clusters. As warm weather begins to shift on to the north, we'll start to see little thunderstorms pop up from time to time, especially during the overnight hours. This is a little more typical of the type of weather we do see in the summer, though it's not really well-timed because a lot of these areas do not need more rain. So that kind of takes us through Saturday. Once we get into Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday of next week, we'll see this warm weather bubble over the entire Corn Belt and into the plains. Then we'll see little waves of energy move across the edge of the warm pattern. That will unfortunately lead to a few more thunderstorm clusters, this time further to the north, but also including a lot of the eastern Corn Belt. So the whole point of what we're talking about right now is that it's going to stay stormy in the eastern Corn Belt, with rainfall probably in the 1.25 inch to 2.5 inch range over the next week from Illinois on to the east. Beyond this period, we're still looking for a few more thunderstorm clusters, but this will primarily occur because we're going to see temperatures turn a lot warmer once again later next week and especially next weekend when we see this whole situation kind of reassemble. So by the time you put all this together, you can easily see that temperatures over the next 10 to 14 days will be near to above normal across a large portion of the Corn Belt, and we'll also see near to above average rainfall, with, again, unfortunately, the wettest weather most likely in these areas that don't need rain.
Do we need to be concerned about the departure at all, especially with the higher temperatures?
Well, I wouldn't say you need to be overly concerned at the moment, but it is something to monitor over the next couple of weeks. We've been very cool lately, and we probably need some heat units to get the crops growing a little bit more. That's always a dangerous situation, though, because it's pretty rare to be saying in July that, hey, we would like to see some warm weather. Generally, that's not the best case for corn and soybeans. So as long as it doesn't last, it looks okay, but we're having a lot of uncertainty here of figuring out exactly what's going to happen. We know a hot area of upper-level high pressure is going to drive the U.S. weather pattern over the next couple of weeks and probably beyond that, but its location is key. Right now, we think it will center somewhere near Nebraska, Kansas, and out of the west, which would just keep things warm, but not too warm. But any deviation in that system, one way or the other, will lead to dramatic weather forecast changes over the next few weeks.
Mike Tenora is with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.